good afternoon. So firstly, let me just start with the China trip. I think you can characterise the trip as very successful. To confirm the words of Premier Wen when we saw him on the Wednesday, said he thought the relationship had never been in better shape. I would endorse that. I think a lot came out of the trip. We took some business leaders with us. I think that was successful. It's clear that there's been a line in the sand drawn in terms of the San Luis situation, and specifically for Fonterra. I think it's quite clear from the Chinese leadership that they do want to see New Zealand involved in the development of their agricultural sector. And we've come away with some initiatives we're going to work on and look at. Another area that they made specific mention was in relation to tourism, where the Chinese are interested in working cooperatively together with New Zealand, where we'll be promoting China and potentially they'll be promoting New Zealand. So look, there are some options there for us to go away and do some work. As I said, from China, they also raised the issue of food safety, and that's another area we were going to go away and give some consideration. But I think it was a successful trip and very interesting. Second thing, I was speaking at Grey Power tonight. We'll be releasing that speech, but essentially in that speech we'll be reaffirming our commitment to retired New Zealanders, reaffirming all of the commitments we've made in the past in relation to New Zealand superannuation and the services that support elderly New Zealanders and retired New Zealanders. Third thing, I just want to comment is on Wednesday I'll be attending a hui in Auckland with other ministers in relation to treaty settlements. That's looking to, again, fulfil our target or our goal of a 2014 date for settling historical grievances. Next point I want to make is that we've considered some advice from the Chief Electoral Officer in relation to the upcoming by-election in Mount Albert. On the back of that advice, I've decided that the by-election will be held in Mount Albert on June the 13th, Saturday, June the 13th. So that's that one. And then lastly, just going to make a few comments in relation to the 9-day fortnight. You will have seen the press release from Paula this afternoon. The Minister of that, there's now three companies that have joined, over 100 jobs saved, over 60 requests for further information. I'll be making an announcement later on in the week about an further extension of the scheme. I'll probably do move this.
Take questions later. Is that in relation to small business?
That will be, that's right. Oh, the only other thing I just thought I probably should mention is next week, obviously there's no house this week, but next week it would be our expectation that on Wednesday the 29th, Michael Cullen will be giving his valedictory statement.
On the 9-day fortnight, why is it that one of the companies is able to remain anonymous?
Should
taxpayers know where this
course is going? I suppose they've taken the view that it's commercially sensitive. I wouldn't see it that way, but I understand that some companies might. There's a little sensitivity there. I'm not too concerned about that. My concern, as far as taxpayers are concerned, is that they fulfil their obligations under the plan.
And that's 117 jobs saved. Is that good enough? I mean, we're getting hundreds of jobs going a week at the moment. The new unemployment figure is supposed to be up.
Well, for a start off, as I said, the scheme is going to run for 18 months. Companies are only eligible for 6 months, so I'm sure there are some companies that are saving that up. Secondly, as you can see, there's been 60 companies that have been considering their options here. I think you'll see more. We get the weekly numbers on the Restart program, and what you're seeing again with Restart is every single week there are more and more people on that scheme. So I think it's one of those things that will build up over time. I don't think success of the 9-day fortnight should be judged because there are enormous number of companies on it. I think success might be that companies can use that as a backstop and as a last resort. So I'm not stressed about it at all.
Do you know what the unemployment figure is now? I know you're a bit loath to track that, but...
No, I don't. In fact, my understanding is it's the Household Labour Force survey, isn't it? It's in May that it gets released, but I don't know.
Right. The last one was 4.7, I think.
4.6 from memory.
Yeah, it does. Well, apparently there was an update today. Oh, yeah. 4.7 for December. But we're still talking. I mean, that's so last year, isn't it? I mean,
it's historical. Can we? Yeah. Look, I don't know. I mean, we see the unofficial unemployment benefit numbers each week, and they're rising, as you expect. Mm. They're rising. I don't have it on top of my head. I've got a feeling that I think they're roughly but I could get the exact number for you, 17 or 18,000 more people on the unemployment benefit today than there was this time 1 year ago. So they are rising, but they're broadly in line with the expectations of Treasury. They're still a very small number relative to the unemployment rate. They're in the order of about 37,000 people on the unemployment benefit. So there are, you know, it's a much smaller number than those technically deemed to be unemployed for the purposes of either the Household Labour Force Survey or the Quarterly Employment Survey.
This morning you indicated the possibility of troops going to Fiji. Under what circumstances would you see that occur?
Well, I think the first thing I'd say is I would expect that to be unlikely. There's no expectations that we would send troops to Fiji. But, you know, of course, you know, New Zealand could always be asked by a multilateral agency like the United Nations to do that. That was the case in East Timor. Now, I'm not anticipating that, but if that would be the sort of circumstance. I certainly don't see New Zealand acting unilaterally.
So do you mean that the invitation was sent to Fiji?
Well, or if there was a unilateral demand or request to do so, but I don't see New Zealand doing it in isolation.
Is there a risk, though, that your comments could be seen as provocative or taken as provocative by the common
law? I don't think so, because it was a hypothetical example.
Is that the message, though, that you want getting out there? Because, I mean, the headlines were, you know, New Zealand considering sending troops to Fiji, just terribly.
Well, I can't control the sub-editors.
But you have, but what you can control is how you respond to questions. And the way you respond to that one was that you would consider sending for it.
Well, there's always a situation where it's possible, but it's not likely.
Are you envisaging, though, you're talking about, say, the current administration being overthrown?
I'm not going to be unspeculating the exact reasons you just pointed out.
What's your take on what's happened there in the last?
Well, I think it's tragic. You know, if you look at what's happened in Fiji, you've got a situation where the constitution's been abrogated, you've got a situation where you've no longer got freedom of the press, you've got a situation where the judicial system's been overthrown, the economy's in freefall. I just can't see how any of that can be of any good to the people of Fiji.
Why has the government decided to pull out of the United Nations and anti-racism conference?
Yeah, I mean, for a number of reasons. The first of them is that we believed it would restrict the freedom of expression. The second thing was that we believed that the conference would create a platform for attacks on Israel, and we believe we're in good company. I mean, the United States, Holland, Italy, Germany, Australia, and Canada will all pull out from the conference.
So I'm correct in saying, though, that
this
is a sign of the New Zealand government sort of heading down the track of following its allies too quickly rather than making an independent principled stand.
Well, I don't think so. I mean, if you look at the comments, I mean, President Obama himself made some quite strong comments on it, I understand, today. it's not a decision we made lightly, but the Minister of Foreign Affairs considered all of the issues and considered the implications of New Zealand going, and I think we're in good company in our decision.
Isn't it better to be there and argue the case rather than stay away?
Well, if that's true for New Zealand, then it's also true for the United States, Holland, Italy, Germany, Australia and Canada.
What was the nature of the advice from the Chief Electoral Office around the timing for Mount Albert by-election?
The preferred option is that seven working weeks were given. So the two dates, you suggested two possible dates, the 6th of June or the 13th of June, and we elected for the 13th of June.
Why did you pick the 13th over the
6th? 6th has got a National Party conference.
Oh, right.
So it just seems slightly easier to do on the 13th. There's no brilliant science to it all.
While you were away overseas, Richard Worth visited a victim of the assault incident, despite the fact that he knew one of the fathers of the young men who have been investigated into this incident. Do you think, again, that showed an election judgment on this time?
Look, on the basis of the information that I had, I don't think his actions were unusual. I mean, the Labour Party claimed that he had no business to do that, but he has been tasked by the National Party to be the contact along these days with Bakshi, to be our conduit, if you like, for supporting the Indian community. Now, his actions in visiting the victim of a crime from the Indian community, this isn't the first time he's done that. So I personally think it's quite a long bow. The allegations have been made against him. He's drawn quite a long bow. And on the basis of the information I have, I'm comfortable with his actions.
Just about the relation to your speech tonight, you say you're going to reaffirm the national commitment. Is there a reason why you're doing that? Do you feel, because you gave pretty strong signals on the comments on the campaign about you need to reiterate that?
No, but I think you can never say it often enough. It's there in your general meeting. I'm going out there. It's quite a wide-ranging speech, actually. There's nothing new in it of note. It's essentially a confirmation of a number of things we're doing. It's an update of where the government is at. But, look, you know, you'll always see comments, for instance, like the OECD last week, you know, where they're calling for us to lift the age of pension entitlements. We're not doing that, and it's important that the government continues to reaffirm its position.
What about the super gold card?
That's remaining.
Until?
Well, we've got no plans to change that.
Did you talk about cycleway at
Kevin? We didn't. It's my expectations I'll be making announcements on the cycleway within the next few weeks.
Some speculation in the Davies today about some changes from what might be proposed in the first place and what you had thought. Is that any truth?
No, I think what we've seen emerge from the process is broadly in line with the kinds of expectations I would have as the idea evolved. I mean, you've got to remember it started in its infancy at the Job Summit as an idea, an aspiration, and I think you're going to see a positive announcement which will reflect something which will actually make a real contribution to tourism in New Zealand.
Would it create 4,000 jobs?
Don't know.
Are you disappointed that the banks pulled out of the government bank?
Again, I mean, when you go to a process like that and you accept that it's a free-flowing, unscripted process, there will always be ideas that will be created for which, when there is further analysis, they prove to be unviable or not workable. The government was committed and keen to try and invest in that program if the banks had been willing. It's my understanding that the banks were the ones that pulled the pin on the idea because it was equity and not debt, it had an implication for their Tier 1 capital. So I met with the chairs of the Job Summit before I went to China, not last week, the week before last. Had a reasonably extensive discussion with Rob Cameron. He'd spoken to me the week earlier. That was really the reason. But they are working on ideas, and we're continuing to work on ideas.
So is it fair to say that the 9-day fortnight and the cycleway are the two really only existing ideas from the Jobs Summit that have got any major significance?
No, wouldn't agree with that. We took another paper to Cabinet today. There's quite an extensive array of initiatives there. You're going to see more announcements from us. They're quite wide-ranging, and I know there's some scepticism in part of the media that you know, you haven't seen enough things yet, but these were ideas in their infancy that had to be worked through by officials. There's been a lot of work done, and I'm very confident that when you look back in 18 months' time at the initiatives that came out of the Job Summit that turned into real policies and commitments from the government, they'll be quite substantial. Now, some of those, for instance, today, the reason we're not making announcements on those days, there are budget implications of some of those.
What do you make of Labor's attempts to look at helicopter trips taken by other ministers, including yourself? I notice there's been a few questions from them.
They're not a very busy opposition, are they?
What about the trip that they've identified for you from the Air Force show at Whenuapai? I noticed the trips, Helensville, Whenuapai, Auckland.
Yeah.
What was happening there?
Well, I took, as you're aware, three trips in the helicopter. The first of them was in relation to the air show. The reason that occurred was I actually had another commitment in my electorate, and it was a question of getting into the air show at any sort of reasonable time, because it's very congested at that point. They were flying around anyway as part of the air show and said, look, they'd come and pick me up. There was never actually an intention to get me out, but you might be aware that there were significant traffic issues and I had another commitment in Auckland. Now, if you consider that in the overall context of an air show where they're flying helicopters around, I don't think there's any cost to the taxpayer. And it's a bit rich coming from Labor, given Phil Goff was the one parading around, jumping out of a P3 to do a parachute jump. The second one was a situation where we took the backup West
WISPAT rescue helicopter again. I mean, I have a pretty busy schedule. That particular day, I had four or five appointments around New Zealand, around Auckland. Yes, we took it over. My understanding is the cost of that was $267. We raised $60,000, and as you know, I don't make a habit of declaring my donations, but I can tell you, because people were there, so it's a matter of public record, I gave $5,000 personally to the WISPAT rescue helicopter on that particular day. Not because anyone has asked me questions, but because I make a series of donations I made it that day. The third one, no one knew, including my own security people, that I was going to take their helicopter ride. My understanding, I thought it had been organised, no one knew about it, and everyone was freaking out about it, but as it turned out, it was a four-minute ride in a helicopter by a private company. So, look, you know, I'm quite able to stand by my record.
Did Cabinet talk about the SAS possibly going back to
Afghanistan? Yes, there was some discussion in general about Afghanistan. The situation is this, is that the nature of the formal request was a visit by the US Embassy to the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. It was a general discussion, and it was in line with the requests we understand that they're making of other NATO and ISAF countries to consider, you know, the wider response to Afghanistan, but it was not a specific request. So at this point, there's been no specific request, but it was interpreted by the minister, and rightly so, as a formal request, because they did go down and talk to the ministry.
How hard a decision would it be for you seeing our troops back, especially these combat troops?
Well, personally, it would be a very hard decision. It's not something we would make lightly. It's not something the Cabinet has considered. That wasn't the nature of the discussion in Cabinet today. All I can tell you is that there are a number of things that we need to consider. Firstly, our capability to do that. We've got, as you're aware, a number of deployments, East Timor, the Solomons, and Afghanistan. Secondly, it would be my long-term desire to exit our commitment in Afghanistan. You know, it's a considerable contribution over time. We'd like to exit Afghanistan. The third thing that I'd say is that, you know, there are a number of factors that need to be considered, but the risk assessments that I am getting from Afghanistan is that our troops in the PRT in Bamiyan province are becoming more at risk. In other words, the situation in Afghanistan is becoming more unstable. And so one of the considerations, and that is the consideration I think that President Obama has got, is it possible to have a greater commitment to stabilise the situation in Afghanistan. Now, that is a consideration that government at some stage will debate. We simply haven't made a decision on that. But if we were to do something, it would be part of a long-term exit strategy.
On Mount Albert, are you intending to have an official campaign period? If so, when does it start? And how much effort will you personally put into campaigning there?
In terms of the officials and stuff, my understanding is the Chief Electoral Officer is going to put out a press release this afternoon, so you know, he'll probably be able to put in exact dates of starting and finishing. I guess from our point of view, it will depend on when we select our candidate, which my understanding is we have two candidates, and it's likely that selection will be completed in early May. I'll put some effort in there, but I would hasten to add this has been a very safe Labor seat. To the best of my knowledge, National's never held the seat.
So you don't expect to throw a lot of Cabinet's resources out campaigning in it?
Well, I'm not going to be spending every second day in Mount Albert, that's for sure.
Just in regards to exit plans, if Fiji, for some reason, explodes very quickly, there are a number of Kiwis who are over there on holiday at the moment. Do we have the capabilities of getting them out? Have you thought about ways of getting them out?
Well, I haven't had any formal advice on that, but, you know, look, we would stand ready, and I'm sure we have the capability to help New Zealanders out if that's required. That's not the advice I've had on Fiji at this time. My understanding is it's stable. We think people should be cautious in their travel arrangements to Fiji, but at this point it's stable.
Has there been any consideration given to involving Aucklanders further in discussions about the reorganisation of the city?
Look, I think we stand willing and ready to continue dialogue with Aucklanders. We accept that it's a big decision. From the government's point of view, there is a desire to see the reforms in place for the 2010 election, and we believe there's been an extensive consultative process held through the Royal Commission, and a huge number of both oral and written submissions.
But the government hasn't in totality adopted the Royal Commission's advice, and we accept that that means we need to continue to engage in dialogue with Aucklanders and with the mayors, and I intend to do that, and I'm sure Rodney Hyde will do that, and the government is not so arrogant that it won't listen to the submissions that are made either before or during the select committee process. There may well be changes that come as a result of that. Well, look, I'm not going to close anything off. I mean, we've put out our position. It's the one we believe is the right response, but we will continue to engage with Aucklanders.
Just in relation to, you said the 9-day fortnight. Did you say you're talking about some initiatives from the job summit, which was budget sensitive,
yeah,
that have been announced? Was the exception to the 9-day fortnight scheme, is that one of those, or are you?
No, that'll be made this week.
Just with Auckland, the councillors at large, so the councillors who don't have a geographic,
yep,
area, is that something that could change after you discuss it with Auckland? Is it?
You could do. I mean, look, there was quite an extensive debate. You'll remember that the Royal Commission favoured 10 councillors from the wards and 10 at large. There was a feeling within Cabinet when we discussed this, and it took up a lot of the time in terms of the discussion, that was a good idea to have some councillors elected large, and that is consistent with what happens across a lot of councils across New Zealand. And the sense was that they would provide a regional-wide perspective and ensure that it didn't break down to just people arguing for their own patch, because this is a council we're charged with enormous responsibilities across Auckland. I still believe that to be the right response, but as I said, you know, it's my intention to engage in dialogue with the leaders of Auckland and to listen carefully to Aucklanders.
Sure. That includes Māori?
Yep, that includes Māori.
Just going back to the UN conference on racism,
yep.
You said that you were concerned about restrictions on freedom of expression. Can you just, what do you mean by that?
Well, that was my understanding of the advice I had.
Maureen McCulley was saying he had a problem with the text that had been prepared, the draft text. What,
yeah,
do you have concerns there?
Yes, and my understanding is that the concern was it contained anti-Semitic references.
Just on the cycleway.
Yeah.
Any ideas sort of beyond their capability of it, but for, say, for instance, to work with the airlines to allow cyclists who come here to perhaps not have to pay for the extra baggage?
Haven't had those discussions, but what I can tell you is that one of the job chairs has obviously been Rob Fife, and he, along with others, has been excited about the cycleway opportunity. I think it is, you know... It is a really legitimate long-term tourism attraction. And I accept, you know, as you'll see when we outline the plans for it, that things can take some time and all the rest of it, but I think in the end it'll be something that people will look back on and say it was a worthwhile addition, and it brought in quite a lot of overseas tourists. And if that's something Air New Zealand can work on, or other airlines, then release.
Have you been surprised, you know, you sort of came up with the idea, but... Actually, you know, parts of New Zealand, such as Southland, were already quite advanced with ideas for cycleways.
Yeah, and look, what is fair to say is that the idea generated some media attention, that generated a lot of interest. I've had endless phone calls into my office from parts of New Zealand who are very agitated about what the likely route might be. But what also is true, and it emerged, and as you can see from the Herald story this morning, there is a lot of expertise in this area from bike groups, Bike New Zealand and the likes. It would be stupid of the government to ignore that technical advice and also some of the work that's already there. They identify the cycle track potentially from Queenstown to Invercargill. That's right, a lot of work's been done on that. And I wouldn't be surprised if that was one of the early cabs off the rank.
Just in relation again to the job summit proposals, but one of the issues, and I think there was an interview in the Financial Times talking about how you wouldn't be able to afford big stimulus packages in the budget. And there's been constraints on the public service budget, which is led to. I mean, is the problem though that there is as many layoffs or jobs lost in the public service at the moment as there are in the jobs we're creating?
Well, there are different issues happening here. I mean, there's firstly a desire to make sure that we keep as many New Zealanders in work as we possibly can, or give them the greatest opportunities to find another job. There's also a short to medium term issue of right sizing public service and making sure it fits into the objectives of the new government. We're not on a slash and burn exercise. We never have been when it comes to the public service. But what we are doing is identifying some programs and some initiatives that aren't aligned with the objectives of the new government. And we're moving people around. Some areas are actually going to be increasing their staff numbers, some are reducing.
But it's not necessarily moving the same people around, is it?
Not necessarily. And that's not always possible.
Yeah. Is there any advances from the government's thinking on the declaration of Indigenous people's rights?
No, but I'm looking forward to getting some more advice on that. We are considering Australia's position and what that means. You'll be aware it's a non-binding document, but obviously, and we're conscious of the nature of the document, but we would also, if we are to sign it, want to make sure we do so in good faith and the best we can to be able to honour it.
Has Cabinet discussed any further NZA and what will be happening with that?
Look, there was a brief discussion on it today. Most of that work has actually been carried out by Cabinet Business Committee, and it's my expectation that the Minister will be bringing a paper to Cabinet relatively soon. At this stage, it's just a headline discussion.
Do you think that Tony Beach should be able to turn to work at one of the state broadcasters, either TVNZ or Radio New Zealand?
I don't want to offer a view on that. I guess the only thing I'd say is, look, the issue is a personal matter. Domestic violence is never okay, and that's got to be well understood. But in the end, people also need to go through a period where we all move on.
Do you think that if we turn down the offer to go to Afghanistan, would our relationship with the state?
I don't know. That wouldn't be the determining factor of whether we would have an increased commitment there. The determining factor is whether we can see a plan, whether the plan, in our opinion, is likely to work, and whether it fits in with our long-term exit strategy.
The only points that you've made are all negatives against not going up here. Are there any? Is there a case?
Well, I haven't seen enough detail of the plan. I mean, as I said to you, while it was, I guess, a formal request, it simply wasn't specific in nature. When the Minister of Foreign Affairs met with the Secretary of State, there was a generalised discussion about Afghanistan, but no specific requests were made. It was a generalised discussion about the President's plans. I mean, if there was a positive, the positive would be when they had an increased commitment to Iraq, I think you can say that the surge looked like it produced a better result. Now, I assume that is the thinking that President Obama has, but I simply haven't had that discussion with him, nor have I seen, outside of the media reports that you've read, any idea of what their plan is.
Have
so
you
talked
any later about the hypothetical going into Fiji and what that
would cause? No. I haven't discussed it.
So is September 2010 an end point in your mind?
It could be, but I mean, at this point we're doing a review of Afghanistan. It's just too early to say.
Sorry to ask this question so sporadically, but the southern part of the cyberway that we just mentioned before—would you envisage the government working sort of hand in hand with the southland to establish that part of the cyberway?
Well, when I lay out greater detail, I'll be laying out a framework of how we'll be handling initiatives, and when you see that, you'll be able to understand how it might work.
It's fair to say that it's going to be a network with, obviously perhaps the Southland one first cab off the rank.
I think that's a fair characterisation of the sort of thing, not necessarily the Southland part of it, but that's a fair characterisation of the likely format.
So would it be a sort of a half and half funding, the government with whatever area has a part of the network it wants to go with?
Prefer not to detail that today.
Just don't harp on about it. Can you say that our risk threat towards Bamiyan has gone up in recent times? What's brought about the rise? Do you know of more information about being attacked or possible attacks?
Well, that's just the advice that I've received, that it's becoming increasingly more dangerous in Afghanistan.